You're listening to the British Birth Stories podcast, the place where mothers from around the country share their birth stories. I am your host, Ashley Brennickmeyer, and I'm so glad that you're here. On today's episode, I have the pleasure of speaking with Jessica Tabaka, who tells us her journey to motherhood. After a year of unexplained infertility, she fell pregnant and went on to birth her two sons via the NHS in Southeast London. Her most recent birth was a COVID-19 regulated experience, which meant that her plans for a home birth were unsupported and cancelled. She candidly shares her postpartum experiences with both feeding and anxiety, and I loved every second of hearing her journey, and I hope you do too. Here's Jessica's story. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Jessica. It's such a pleasure to have you. Let's jump right in and have you tell all of us a little bit about yourself and who you live with and where you live, please.
Yes. Hi, Ashley. Nice to meet you too. My name's Jessica, as you said. I live in Southeast London with my husband, Bart, and I've got two boys, Theo, who's 2.5, and Felix, who's 6 months old. And I've been a fashion designer for 10 years, but I'm currently retraining in interior design, so kind of design area, basically.
So cool. And let's begin with your birth stories, with your first. Can you just tell us if you were trying to fall pregnant or just in general, just about your journey with your first?
So I got married quite young with my husband when I was 23, because we met when I was 19, but we knew we didn't want to have children straight away. So we waited a few years, but when I was 26, we bought a flat. And then when I was about 27, 28, we decided to start trying. I was young, I'd always had normal periods, etc. So I kind of, I'm quite a planner. So I thought, okay, I'm going to have a baby in May 2017 and it's going to be a girl, which like in retrospect is quite funny because sort of taught the one thing, one of the biggest things definitely that having children has taught me is that mother nature, you know, you can't always plan these things. So I thought that's how it worked. I was convinced that I was pregnant the first month we stopped using contraception. So we sort of, both of us did the pregnancy test together, you know, really excited. And then it was a little bit of an anticlimax when it was negative, but I wasn't too worried. But then the months went on and I even had a month when my period was 3 weeks late, but the tests kept coming back negative. So I'm not sure what happened then, but anyway, I just was continuing to try. At that point, I'd sort of started, you know, acupuncture. I was using those little ovulation sticks and trying to get referred by my GP to see a specialist, etc. And in the end, we were actually trying for 1 year, which was quite hard. In retrospect, it's not a crazy long time, but I think it's the unknown that kills you, because we had tests and we were told there was no reason why we weren't getting pregnant, but they said you have a 20% chance each month and you just aren't hitting it. But I think because friends were starting to get pregnant around me and people ask stupid questions like, so you did you not want children, you know, do you not like children or something like that, and you're just like, ah. Oh. And I think if someone had told me at the beginning it's going to take a year, you'd be like, okay, that's not that long, it's fine, you know. But it's just the unknown, I think, that's the hardest. Like even on the 11th month, you have no idea when you'll get your baby or if you ever even will, kind of thing. So that was quite a tough introduction to, you know, it gave me time to prepare, I guess. But yeah, it was a bit of a tough introduction to the whole fertility baby world in that way.
And then did you end up falling pregnant naturally, or what happened after that year?
Yeah, so it was in May 2017, we went on holiday to Italy to celebrate our wedding anniversary, and we stayed in the most incredible, like beautiful farmhouse in Tuscany with our own pool. It was magical. And I felt really, really relaxed there. And I was just like lying by the pool with like the sounds of the birds with this water feature and the bees. They had all this honey. They were making honey there and stuff. And I actually recorded the sound. It was quite funny because I recorded the sound we could hear around the pool because I just wanted to be able to close my eyes and be transported back there. And we actually ended up using that recording, like playing on a loop during Theo's birth in the end. And I was also reading this amazing book called The Art of Baby Making by Jared Kite, which I would really recommend to anyone struggling with unexplained infertility. He's an acupuncturist who really takes a holistic approach to the subject. But anyway, it ended up being the classic sort of go on holiday, start relaxing about getting pregnant and forget about it and suddenly get pregnant, which everyone tells you to do when you're trying for a baby. But it's much harder to do this in practice than it is in theory. So yeah, I did get pregnant on that holiday. And I actually had an appointment to potentially start looking at starting IVF when I came back, like a few days after we got back. And when the consultant like was scanning my uterus, he was like, oh, okay. And I sort of looked at him a bit funny, but he sort of went out the room and then just came back and was like, you've got a perfectly normal uterus, everything, didn't say anything more. I've kind of always wondered, I think he maybe could have told at that point that I was pregnant, but maybe he just decided to let me find out by myself. But anyway, by this point, I wasn't even taking pregnancy tests each month. I was just waiting for my period to start because it was just a bit too depressing to get a negative test every time. So I just decided to just like not take any more. But a few weeks later, my husband actually had to go abroad to see family for a few days, and I was home alone. And I realized my period was due, and I had drinks with friends that weekend and also a massage booked. And you're not meant to have a massage in early pregnancy. So I decided to do a quick test just to be sure it would be okay. And it was positive. Which was
such
a really
fun surprise.
I remember just bursting into tears. And I didn't want to tell my husband over the phone. So I, you know, because we waited for so long. So I just thought like, oh, over the phone could be a bit, you know, unromantic or something. So I just cancelled all my plans for the weekend and just like had 4 little days, this little secret inside of me trying to not get too excited because it was early days. But yeah, I just couldn't wait to tell him. And finally he came back home on the Monday evening and I got to tell him in person, which was just a really wonderful, happy moment.
That's so exciting. Did you immediately know what care route you wanted to go down? And did you choose to find out the gender when that time came?
Yeah, sure. So yes, we decided to go NHS for both the births. We've got some good hospitals around here. So I went with King's for Theo, my first baby. And they were great. It's a research teaching hospital, so all the scans take quite a long time, and there's like a lot of people in the room, and they kind of forget you're there because they're all sort of very, you sort of feel like you're sort of specimen A a little bit. It's all very efficient, and it's like a beautiful building and everything. But it was there wasn't a lot of people skills. Like I had a bit of bleeding at 7 weeks, so I'd had an early scan, and then we'd actually already booked in a private scan at 9 weeks before I knew I was going to have this early scan because we wanted to tell family a bit earlier. So by the time I came to my 12-week scan, I'd already had 2 scans, so I was quite like relaxed about it, not worried, you know, too much by that point. But they didn't really speak to me in the scan, and then afterwards they sort of said, oh, can you just wait in the waiting room? And then they said, come with us, and took us into this little side room with like the sofa and a coffee table with like a box of tissues on it. And I was just like, oh god. But actually in the end there was just this one measurement that it was still in the normal range, but it was close to being out of the range, so they just wanted to come back for a few extra scans throughout the pregnancy. And in the end it was totally fine. So it was all very good, but yeah, just not great. It was quite I had my first at King's and then my second at Lewisham Hospital, and they were quite different in terms of their sort of people skills, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And those can make a big difference.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And then did you choose to find out Theo's gender?
Yes, we did. And again, actually, at that scan as well, which I understand, obviously, they don't want to accidentally tell anybody who doesn't want to find out the gender what it is. But she sort of checked sort of 2 or 3 times that you want to find out. We're like, yeah, and sort of holding hands. And then she sort of came to the end and was like, okay, yeah, you can, we're finished. And we were like, what is it? And she was like, oh, it's a boy. And we were like, oh my God, okay. Like, you know, that's quite big news. But obviously for her, it was just kind of, you know, every half an hour she gets to tell someone else that news. But so it was a little bit offhand. And I had felt that it was a boy. That pregnancy, I was really sure it was a boy. So it was kind of like, okay. And we'd chosen the name already. So it was like, oh, this is Theo, you know, so that was exciting. And then I had a good pregnancy for the rest of it. I didn't feel too ill and he was healthy throughout.
And I actually meant to backtrack a little bit. How was your first trimester? Did you have any pregnancy symptoms at any point in pregnancy, or was it pretty straightforward for you the whole time?
It was pretty straightforward the first time round. Yeah, no, I felt like a little bit tired, but I think the difference is as well the first time round, as I'm sure you'll know second time round, is that the first time round you can sort of come home and just be like, I'm going to take a nap now, I'm going to have a bath. Whereas second time round, you've got a toddler to look after as well. So it's not quite the sort of 9 months of relaxation in the same way.
Yes, I definitely know how that is.
And then did you have an antenatal class or classes that you had looked into, or did you choose to take any? What did you choose in this pregnancy?
Yeah, we did NCT, which I'm really, really glad we did for us. I mean, I think I've heard mixed reviews from people. I think it really depends what group you get. I wouldn't say it was so much worth it in terms of sort of birth education, because like I'd read lots of books and stuff, so I didn't feel like it was kind of, oh, thank God they told me that kind of thing. But just for the group we met, it was amazing. We still meet up. Almost the whole group is having their second babies this year as well. So we got really lucky with the group we made, which was really important, especially those first few days, just having someone to text at 3 a.m. And you make friends fast with them because you're all going through this really intense period of your life together. So I was really pleased we did NCT for us. Yeah.
And then I guess let's already jump to your birth. But how did labor start? And yeah, how did you know it was beginning, and how far along were you at that point?
So I was 40 plus two, and I was super frustrated. And it's a bit like, I guess, getting pregnant. It was like, if you were told it was going to be 2 days late, you'd be like, oh, that's fine. But like, at that point, I was sort of already thinking, I was sure I was going to be early, and then it wasn't. So I was feeling super frustrated, even though it was only 2 days over, which is a bit silly. But it was Valentine's Day. So yeah, Theo was born on Valentine's Day. And my husband, Bart, and I had luckily he decided to work from home that day. And we did exchange cards and presents over breakfast. And then my waters broke. So I don't know if it was the oxytocin of Valentine's Day. But I wasn't entirely sure. I was sort of Googling how to tell if your water's broken. So I sort of went to the loo and just felt oh God, wait, was that my waters? What happened there? And then just more water kept coming out, and we were trying to work out if I'd wet myself or not, which was not super Valentine's Day romantic. But we called the labor ward, and they told us, don't come into the labor ward, just go to the maternal assessment unit. So we went into there, and they said, yeah, your water's definitely broken, but they didn't want to check me because once your waters are broken, it can introduce bacteria if you do a vaginal examination. So, but the woman was like, you're definitely not going to have a baby that day because your contractions haven't started. And I was a bit nervous about that because I knew that I was on a bit of a countdown, because they like you 24 hours after your waters have broken. You often get pushed towards induction. So I was a bit like, oh, okay. So we went home. I'd started on the car on the way home to have sort of really light period type cramps. So we decided to go for a walk to try and wrap things up, and it had the complete opposite effect. And basically my contractions completely stopped. So I was like, okay, came home about 4 p.m. I was like, I'm going to have a nap because things might kick off tonight. Just get relaxed kind of thing. And as soon as I lay down, I had a huge, huge, really painful contraction, and then another. And I was like, oh my God, wow, okay, this is happening. they were the two most painful contractions I had during the whole birth. And I think it's because I was lying down on my back. So from that point, I decided to sort of be on all fours or kneel over the bed for contractions. And that really, really helped. And I found focusing on the break between contractions really helpful. It kind of, while I was in it, really made sense, why sometimes they're called waves, because it really was the pain peaks and then there's a lull kind of thing. And things really kicked off quite fast. So an hour and a half later, we realized I'd been having three contractions every 10 minutes for the last hour. So Bart was like, I think we should call the labor ward again. And I was like, no, it's my first baby. This is crazy. It's way too early to be going in. But I was like, fine, I'll speak to them. And they were like, well, you should come in, maybe be checked out from the sound for me. And I was a bit annoyed because I was sure we were going to go in and then they were going to tell me to go home. And we were 20 minute drive away. So I was like, well, so that was kind of a bit curious to know how dilated I was. So Bart called a taxi, and it was quite funny because everything's a bit of a blur from that point. But when the car pulled up, half our bags were in it, it was pouring with rain. Apparently I said to him, I don't even remember this, I said, actually, I don't want to go to the hospital. I think I'm just going to give birth at home. I think I was maybe going through the transition period, like where you just sort of decide like, no, kind of, I just remember going into the bathroom, like closing the door and being like, no. And he was like, oh no, we're not having unplanned home birth. So he was like, yeah, okay, sure. Like, let's talk about it in the taxi. So he managed to get me into the taxi basically. And we had an amazing taxi driver who wasn't too worried about the screaming and kicking in the back seat. And I could feel a strong urge to push, but I thought I was just imagining things. So anyway, we got to the hospital, and bit of a backstory. I'm very claustrophobic. I used to be a lot more claustrophobic, and actually having a baby and kids has like helped me hugely with a lot of anxiety stuff. But the labor ward at King's College is on the fourth floor. And I was like, when we got there, I was like, I don't want to take the lift. I was just too like worried that I was like the lift would break down and I was going to have a baby by myself in the lift. So I decided to take the stairs. And to his credit, Bart took it entirely in his stride, and just picked up our bags while I grabbed the handrail and started making my way up. And I was like properly in labor by this point. So I was kind of making quite a lot of noise and attracting attention. And people kept trying to come and meet me with wheelchairs and take me up in the lift. And I was like, no. Anyway, eventually a midwife was called, like when I was like on the third floor. And she literally just pulled my leggings and underwear down completely in the stairwell. And I was like, oh my God, okay. And she was like, oh, I thought I was going to see a head down there. But I was like, no. So she helped me up one more floor. And they took me. I really, really had wanted to give birth in the midwife-led unit they have at King's. They have two rooms with water births, and they're big and huge, and a double bed. But they said, no, we've got to check how dilated you are. So they took me into like this triage side room. And they examined me and said, okay, you are 10 centimeters and you need to start pushing straight away. Which was incredibly shocking to hear. I was, yeah, completely, completely surprised by that. And I had a bit of a hard time from that point pushing. I couldn't really feel anything. I don't know if I was just numb or like in shock kind of thing, but the pushing contractions. So they kept telling me like, push when you feel a pain. And I in the end, I was like, can you just tell me when you hear like, when you feel like an intensity? Because I couldn't. I think they thought it was like some hypnobirthing thing. But that I was saying sort of, I couldn't feel any pain, but I actually just couldn't feel anything. So it was like, it took a couple of hours, nearly 3 hours to push him out, which they were kind of a bit like, they were good. And we had a midwife shift though, but there was like someone come in, they called the doctor in three times to do the episiotomy. And every time he was like, no, you're going to give birth in like two pushes, just keep pushing. But he was a really big baby in the end. So I just couldn't push him out. But, and one of the midwives sort of came in and wanted me to get out this room, cause it was like in triage. And she was like, we're going to have to cut her if she doesn't push him out kind of thing. So it was all a bit kind of ready, you know, kind of crazy, go. But eventually the third time the doctor came in, he did the episiotomy and he came out straight away. But yeah, he was enormous, slippery baby. He was like 9.5 pounds, which is probably why I had trouble pushing him out.
Wow, amazing. And then how was the placental delivery as well?
I had the injection for that, because they said, okay, I put on my birth plan that I would be, you know, if I could do it naturally, that's fine. But they said, you've lost quite a lot of blood. So I was happy just to have the injection, and that came out. I had really, really bad shakes after labor. So I sort of held him for a little bit, but then I just had to give him to my husband. And I just couldn't stop shaking for 2 hours. It was maybe the adrenaline and also like the blood I'd lost kind of thing. I had been a bit anemic in my pregnancy and I hadn't taken the iron tablets, which was not great. So yeah, that was a bit of a sort of shocking experience post. It was quite funny because I'd done like hypnobirthing leading up to it and everything, and like after that first contraction, like Bart had like put it on and I just like threw my phone across the room and was like, make her shut up. Like it was like running a sprint, not a marathon for me kind of thing. It was like very, very intense experience. So yeah, the placenta, I don't really remember it first time around.
And did you have to get stitched up from the episiotomy as well?
I did. Yes.
And how did you find that? Did you remember it or?
The actual stitching up was fine, but it didn't heal very well and the stitches came out quite quickly. It was kind of interesting because the midwife, when she checked, was like, was it the doctor who sewed you up or was it a midwife? And I was like, oh, it's the doctor. And she's like, yeah, the midwives usually like do a bit of a better job, like a bit more careful than the male doctors, which is kind of interesting, which is very true for me the second time round. Also when they did the stitches, it was the midwife. She definitely took longer, but everything healed a lot better. So I don't know if it's just like, yeah, sort of being in a bit of a rush kind of thing with the doctor, but it healed by itself in the end. But just I had quite a lot of pain post-birth, sort of for the first week I was kind of limping around, and yeah, it was just all a bit of a shock kind of thing.
And when were you discharged from the hospital, and how did your feeding journey go? What did that look like for you?
Yeah, so we were discharged. So he was born, we came in on the Wednesday evening and we were discharged by the Thursday afternoon. So they really wanted him to do, done a wee. He'd done a poo, but he hadn't done a wee in his nappy that we could see. I'm sure he'd done a wee at some point, but it wasn't obvious that he'd done a wee, and they had to sort of tick this off on their paperwork. So we kept sort of being like, come on, do a wee. And luckily he just did it within the cutoff point so that they could sign us off for that evening. So like if he'd done it like an hour later, I would have had to stay an extra night. So my first night was fine actually, because I gave birth at like 10 p.m. So by the time all the stitches, everything had finished, it was like gone midnight, and they very kindly put me on the recovery bay rather than going straight to the postnatal ward. So we had that to ourselves for like, I didn't sleep, I just like sort of lay there holding him, but we got a bit of kind of privacy post birth. And then they took me down to labor ward at like 7 a.m. the next day, so I just spent the day on it, which I think made it a more positive experience, because I could see that if you were there for a few days it would have been quite not great, because there's just so many people in there and it's so hot and everything. And then with feeding, yeah, so I breastfed Theo, but that is definitely, I always say, like, being pregnant fine, giving birth fine, breastfeeding is the thing I found so hard, particularly the first time. I know everyone gets some pain, but Theo was tongue-tied, which we didn't realize at first, and I was having incredible amounts of pain, sort of bleeding nipples. I didn't know what I was doing because it was the first time round, and even if you've done like a class, you can't really like practice that until you've got a baby kind of thing that's latching on. So I didn't really realize what I was doing, and I'd like already caused a lot of damage. And I also had like a really scary experience with day four kind of baby blues the first time round. So often on day four you get I'd been warned about this, but like a bit of a dip because your hormones from the pregnancy are going down, your milk usually comes in then, so there's like new hormones arriving, and I think also like the adrenaline post-birth is sort of wearing off and the tiredness is kicking in. And I basically started really freaking out and having a bit of like an anxiety attack. And I decided to call the labor ward for a bit of reassurance. And the woman I spoke to did not reassure me. She got very worried. I'm sure she was just, you know, doing her job and trying to just make sure everyone was safe. But I was sort of saying, oh, I just feel really overwhelmed. I feel really, you know, I'm feeling a bit claustrophobic, a bit anxious. You know, I just feel like I just want to walk out the house. Like, you know, when Theo was crying, it really affects you as the mother. It's like a kind of reaction you get, I guess, like sort of to protect your baby kind of thing. But I just wanted to walk out of the house, basically. And she said, okay, you need to come to A&E. I'm going to book you in to see a psychiatrist. And I was like, oh, whoa, okay. And that just really spun me out. I decided to not go in because I thought, and I think that was the right decision in the end. But it just made me, I had a really kind of scary 24 hours where I was just lots of anxiety with my milk coming in. And then luckily on day five, because you have a midwife visit, yeah, usually the day after you come back from hospital, and then on day five they come to see you. And luckily I had the most amazing midwife come to my house that day, who just, you know, I sort of came in, I was like my boobs out crying, hadn't slept for probably like 24 hours, and she was just like, okay, right, we're gonna sort you out. And she was a huge help. And she actually ran a breastfeeding cafe locally, which I went to a few times. But in the end I had pain. We had his tongue tie cut about 3-4 weeks after he was born. I went to see a cranial osteopath who thought maybe his jaw was really tight because of the fact he'd been in the birth canal for so long. But I was in excruciating pain breastfeeding for 10 weeks. And yeah, so it was, you know, I was crying at every feed kind of thing, which was really, really, really intense. I've since realized second time around, there's something called mammary constriction syndrome, which a lot of people haven't heard about. But it's basically you sort of get vasospasms in your nipples because you're so tense. So it's like it's self-perpetuating because you're tensing because you're scared of the pain. And then that's making it worse kind of thing. Because I was told lots of things like, oh, there's like nipple thrush or the tongue tie or his jaw's too tight. But nothing was ever completely like hitting the right kind of note, basically. And then this time when I found that out, there's a series of massages you can do. And that really, really helped second time round in my breastfeeding journey. So that's a really important thing, actually, which I wish more people knew about because, in the end, I was able to breastfeed him for a year, but me and the beginning of breastfeeding, we don't really get on. Both boys have been tongue-tied, and it's been, a bit of a journey both times.
And with the mammary constriction, for just massaging was able to help sort out and get you on a different path for that next year?
Yeah, so it's basically like massaging the pec muscles kind of thing. It's really interesting, actually, because even my midwife hadn't heard of it. I found out about it on, I don't know if you've heard of La Leche League. They're amazing, aren't they? Yeah, I was on their Facebook group and I sort of just posted out desperation and someone was like, what if you've heard of this thing? And I looked it up and it was like, oh my God, this was second time around as well. So this was with Felix. So first time it just kind of just went eventually, I think, like the baby gets bigger and the latch gets easier and more naturally kind of thing once they get to around 3 months. But it saved me a lot of pain second time around. Because it's basic. And I think also just knowing it's that means you sort of tell yourself, okay, relax. You know, you kind of think, okay, I need to relax these muscles. So massaging them helps, but also just knowing what it is, because I think not knowing what it was also was quite confusing as well.
Absolutely. I'm going to link that in the show notes as well as a few other things that you've mentioned, because that's even helpful for me, because I wish I had known that for my breastfeeding journey. Had a lot of parallel things happen with my daughter.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
definitely grateful for you for sharing that.
Awesome.
And then the next question I always find interesting to ask about is health visitors, because it can be such a wide spectrum of help or not help. How did you find it with Theo and your journey?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had like one massive kind of negative experience, like, one incident in that way. But I definitely haven't found them to be wildly helpful, like even over like, so I think I was put on a bit of a list after the sort of day four breakdown, as it were, with Thea. So I had someone, I wasn't signed off from my midwife for a little bit, and I had sort of a few extra health visitors sort of come round. And eventually after about a month, they were like, okay, she's fine. But there was a lot of kind of with the breastfeeding as well, just kind of being like, oh, you know, you can just give him formula, which, there is absolutely nothing wrong with formula, you know, like, I think I was given a bit of formula when I was a baby. Like I know lots of you can't tell if someone's had any formula. I think it's an amazing thing, but I think it's just something I was really kind of mean to myself about and just didn't want to do. And so I felt like I wasn't being supported in not wanting to do it, if that makes sense. It just felt a bit like dismissive. So I do think the health visitors need looking at in this country, because it just seems like it's really luck of the draw of who you get, basically.
I also think it's interesting what you talked about with the day four and then being flagged and just maternal mental health in general. Mm. I feel like it's the way the system's set up right now that resonated so much for me as well, where it was like, come into A&E and we'll get you right away to a psychiatrist. And it's like, that's not the help I need. I literally just need someone to come reassure me and be with me.
Exactly.
And it's also just not fair, like, to new mothers to be like, okay, come to A&E with your baby.
Which is so dramatic, because I was thinking, oh my God, he's going to be taken away from me. Yeah. You know, my headset, I went into a real spiral at that point, because I really thought, I'm going to call them and they're going to be like, it's okay, honey, it's your first baby, we'll get through this. Kind of. And it was like, I know some mothers can experience psychosis post-birth, but it's super, super, super rare. So I understand that obviously she wouldn't want to just like brush me off on the other hand and then, you know, find out that actually it was kind of more serious than that. But it really worried me being told, like, you know, A&E psychiatrist, I was like, oh, okay, like this person is speaking to me and thinks I need to go to A&E, to the psych ward, you know. It was like, oh, okay, maybe things are worse than I think they are, kind of thing.
It's quite an isolating response as well, because then you're like, I'm just not going to tell anybody because you're not really listening to what I'm saying.
Exactly. And then you start thinking you're going to, you know, I'm going to be, you know, on some ward and they're going to take my baby away from me, etc., which, you know, probably isn't what would happen. But I'm actually really, even though I wouldn't necessarily, you know, advise anyone to not follow like medical procedures if you're being told that, I'm actually really, really glad I just stayed home and then just got through that night and was fine, you know, like it was,
yes, a lot. I empathize a lot with that.
Oh,
as well. So thank you again for sharing candidly. Just in the interest of time, I'm just going to guide us to the next pregnancy.
Of course,
Just let us know how did you arrive mentally at the place to be like, yep, I'm ready for the next one. Talk us through that a little bit, please.
Well, part of it was I wasn't sure how long it was going to take as well, second time around, because I thought, oh, it took a while the first time. So we started trying and I got pregnant immediately. So it was a little bit of a shock because we had just bought a house that needed loads of work. And I literally found out a couple of days after we got the keys. So the whole pregnancy has just been like a race, was just a race to get the house in like a good enough state to actually have a baby in. And after Theo's birth at the hospital, like when I was talking to the midwife after, she was like, yeah, that was really fast for a first time baby. Like probably your second one will be even faster. Like really recommend you have a home birth. And I was like really open to that because I'd read and loved like Ina McGeskin the first time round. And I was really like, yeah, open to having the idea of my baby in like a non-hospital environment. I'd hoped to be in the midwife led suite the last time, but obviously that hadn't happened. So I was like, okay, we're going to do this home birth. Like the house is in a bit of a wreck anyway, so won't be scared about like messing it up with, you know, the birth pool. I got my birth pool and everything. And then obviously we didn't really know what 2020 was going to have in hold for us with an April baby.
Did you plan to have a home birth via the NHS or did you hire independent midwives?
No, via NHS again. Yeah, exactly. But this time it was with Lewisham Hospital because we'd moved slightly more east. So we were in the new catchment. Yeah.
Okay. And then did you choose to do the same or did you choose to do an antenatal course since this was your second baby?
I didn't. They offered it to me, but I sort of felt like I know what I'm like. The first time around, I've been more about making friends, kind of thing. And they all still lived in the area, so I didn't do any more antenatal classes. Yeah.
And did you choose to find out the gender this time as well?
Yeah, we did. And I was sure the last time I'd been sure it was a boy, and it was a boy. And this time I was sure it was a girl, and it wasn't a girl. And it was a shock because I'd felt way, way sicker this time round. I felt really different. Really ill, just exhausted, like my skin was really bad. And so I was like, oh, this must be a girl, because like they say, like you feel ill, like more ill with a girl and everything. And we were really, so we both did. And I sort of, again, stupid me still planning, thinking I can plan Mother Nature, being like, I'm gonna have a boy and then a girl. And it wasn't, and it was kind of a shock when they told us. Actually, I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, I had sort of had a bit of like a surprise. But yeah, he's here and he's lovely and I love the relationship between them. And I feel really happy that like very proud to be sort of mom of boys kind of thing.
And did the sickness taper off? Was it just first trimester?
It was mainly first trimester, but I think there was a lot more tiredness. And I think just being, again, living through a renovation, it was quite intense. We were like the first few months really, kind of 8-9 weeks. We were sleeping on like a blowout mattress on the living room floor. We had no heating until like November. We had no electricity upstairs. So we'd redone our bathroom, but we hadn't finished the rewiring. So we were like taking showers, like with our torchlight of the phone and stuff. So I think that probably contributed to feeling a bit more, a bit more ill and tired throughout the pregnancy.
And then, so COVID started ramping up in March. So how far along were you when just give me the parallel timelines on your journey, how you're feeling along with the COVID.
So I was feeling okay. Kind of, I was 8 months when in March. So he was born in April, like pretty much at the peak. On the 23rd of April, he was born. So it was, it was a very strange ending to my pregnancy. Everything suddenly, it was like I went into work one day, and the next week they were like, "Oh, we're advising pregnant women, you know, work from home." So I started working from home for a week, and then they were like, "Yeah, you're not going to be going back to work." So I didn't sort of get to clear my desk. I didn't get to finish. I didn't get to do any sort of handover. I didn't get to say goodbye to my colleagues. Nothing like that. Then I was told, "Oh, all home births are actually cancelled because the London ambulance services said we can't guarantee that we can, in case of an emergency, send out an ambulance." So it was very, very strange way to kind of end things. And I had one moment I had to go into hospital to be assessed sort of when I was about 38 weeks pregnant, because I started feeling dizzy and they just wanted to double check my glucose levels and stuff. And it was such a weird experience. I sort of went in with this mask and I was wearing gloves because everyone, you know, was super, no one was used to wearing gloves or mask or anything like that at that point. So I was sort of all gloved up and it was like, yeah, I won't touch anything. You know, I hadn't left the house in a few weeks. Went in, went through the whole hospital. There was like no one there. It was really, got to this place and buzzed this buzzer and they were like, "Do you have a cough? Do you have a temperature?" And I was like, no. And they said, okay, come in. One person in this whole thing hooked me up to all these machines, like clipped on my finger, did a blood test. Like I was fetal monitoring and I was just sitting there, this empty ward, and just looking out the window being like, this is like some apocalypse movie kind of thing. This is really, you know, wearing a mask, wearing gloves on my hand. A very, very, very strange experience. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So bizarre, I can imagine. And as well, I know each trust kind of has their own take on guidance. What did your hospital say about birthing partners at this time? And yeah, who was allowed?
Yeah, so it was all at the beginning, so everything was a bit kind of, it was changing by the day. And I, you know, I was speaking to midwives and they were like, "Oh, to be honest, we don't know, it might change," kind of thing. So and I'd been hearing that in France they weren't allowing partners in, and I was like, oh god. I mean, I was so grateful that it wasn't my first baby, because I think I would have been a lot more freaked, you know, having had a positive birth the first time round. I think at least I wasn't sort of so much worried about the actual birthing, but obviously I didn't want him to not be there. And so what I was told was, your husband cannot come in until you are in established labor. So when you're 4 centimeters plus, and then they'll probably have to leave very soon after the birth. But in the end, that wasn't our experience, because we were on the birth center. And I think because we were on one room, like in one room the whole time, there wasn't so much of a rush to kind of like, okay, you need to get out because she's going to the labor ward, to the postnatal ward, if that makes sense. So he was actually able to stay until we left the hospital. So there were all these different kind of rumors really going around about what it was going to be like. But the actual birth in the end wasn't too affected, which I'm really grateful for. I've spoken to other people who had their babies on the labor ward and it was quite different. So I think we're very lucky that we won the birth center.
And how did labor begin and how far along were you at that point?
So I was 40 plus 4, but they had kept moving my dates back, and in my head this time I had not told myself I was going to be early. I had told myself I was going to be a bit late, so I was a lot more relaxed about it. And my husband really, really wanted Felix to be born on his birthday. I don't really know why. I would hate to share my birthday, but he doesn't really like celebrating, so he was sort of hoping it would be. And on his birthday, my water's going. I was sort of feeling like a trickle. And obviously we needed to have someone come and look after Theo while we went to the hospital. So I had called my mum and she lives a couple of hours away. And I said, "I don't know, maybe this is a bit too soon, but you know, maybe come up." So she came up. And by that point we were, the water had started coming out, and I'd called the labor ward and they'd said, "Oh, it's probably, you know, if you haven't had a gush, it's probably nothing. So maybe just wait." But my midwife, who I originally had with a home birth, had said, "Look, it was fast the first time. As soon as you feel anything, go into the labor ward." So I had started having kind of mild like cramps again, but I could talk through them. They were sort of like, I don't know, like 3 or 4 an hour. I wasn't in labor yet, but my mom and Buck were like, "Let's come on, let's go to the labor ward." So I was like, "Okay, fine, this is silly," again, thinking. And I got there and they were like, "Yeah, they checked me, and luckily Bart was able to come in with me straight away. They were really relaxed, actually. I don't know if it's just because it was like there weren't really many systems in place because it was still all early days. But they were like, yeah, it's fine, you can come in. And she checked me and she was like, no, you know, you're only 2 centimeters. You're not an established labor. And I was like, no, I know I'm not. But I'm so grateful. She said, it's 11 p.m. You had a fast birth the first time around. I'm not going to send you home. We've got like loads of rooms empty on the birth center, not loads, but like there's a few rooms empty, like just go in there and have a sleep, like stay in the hospital. So I was like, okay, thank you. And we went in and we were like, oh, wow, you know, birth center, quite different to the sort of cupboard basically we gave birth to in the first time. It was like this big room with the double bed and the pool and everything. And I really wanted to have a water birth both times. But the first time, obviously, I hadn't been able to. So I just kind of slept and my contractions sort of started picking up, but I sort of just was able to sleep through them. And the midwife, it was super like relaxed, like the lights were dimmed. She was like, I'm just going to come in every hour to check on you. So yeah, it was like 10 to 11 when we got there. So like 10 to 12, she came in. She was like, hi. And we were like, yeah, it's fine. Nothing's really happening. 10 to 1, she came in and I was like, yeah, maybe starting to feel something. And then suddenly about like 1:15, I started having a just crazy, like it was like kicked off like really, really fast, like the last time. And I remember after a few like contractions, I said to her, like, what is the time? Because I knew she was coming in at 10 to the hour, every hour. And he said, it's 20 to 2. And I was like, no, call her in, call her in, call her in. So he called her in. She was like, okay. Like, I'm going to start filling up the pool. And they stood me up to get into the pool and my waters broke. So actually, probably they hadn't broken at first. And or maybe it was just the hind waters can break sometimes early, like just this massive gush. And she was like, okay, there's some meconium in the water. Anna, the baby's coming right now. Get on the bed. And was like, and I was like, is my baby okay? Like she said, meconium in the water. So it kind of freaked me out. But she's like, yeah, just push, get him out. And this time, completely different to the first, just one push and his whole body and head came out in one. So yeah, in the end, it was like 40 minutes of established labor, essentially. So it was very, very, very fast. So I'm really glad they didn't send me home. Otherwise, I probably would have definitely had him in the car park or the car or something like that. So I'm very glad I was in hospital already.
And I remember in your first birth, you said that you had stitches again this time. So mm-hmm. Can you tell me about that as well?
Yeah, so he came out, obviously, very fast, and he was also another big baby, not quite as big as Theo, but he was 8.8 pounds, so still another big baby. And yeah, so my episiotomy basically ripped open and tore a bit more, so that was not great. And it's funny, it was actually a lot more painful the second time round in my head. I don't know if it was because like first time round I thought, oh, it's going to be, you know, you'd sort of told horrific pain, and then it sort of was like better than I thought it was going to be. And so this time I was quite relaxed and thought, oh, I'm fine with pain. And then actually it was quite painful when you're in it. Obviously you forget about it afterwards, but it was very intense and painful, but I'm very lucky that it was a very, very fast birth. But yeah, so the stitches actually almost took longer than the actual labor, basically. But luckily, and again, I don't know if it's episiotomy versus a tear, but they healed much, much better. Or because it was midwife stitching me up rather than the doctor. But it healed a lot better this time around.
And then did you choose to deliver the placenta via injection or physiologically?
Physiologically this time around. So yeah, so that was okay. I was kind of like, it sounds really stupid to say exhausted because I know I had a really fast birth. So, but I just felt really kind of like, again, both times it's like I've sort of been for a round in the ring. I felt kind of, it's been so intense. So I was just a bit like, oh my God, now I've got to deliver this placenta, but it was fine. It's really weird because I was listening to your previous podcast and I don't remember looking at, I'm sure I've been shown it both times, but it's just completely been blanked out of my mind. I think potentially just because like both times after birth, I've just been a bit like, what? For like a little while that I can't remember seeing it either time.
I haven't seen mine. So I also don't know.
Yeah, but, yeah.
How did breastfeeding go this time? Tell us about that journey or feeding in general.
So I kind of was like, okay, I know what I'm doing this time. And amazingly, I went to my day. So there were no, obviously a lot of visits were cancelled. So I didn't have anyone come to the house at all. But you did, the one thing I did have to do was go on day five. Instead of them coming to us, I had to go to like a hub, like a sort of safe hub where you had to go in and have your baby weighed and just have the day five where they check your stitches and everything.
Was it like a midwifery care unit or was it a health visitor?
It was a health visitor hub, but I was checked by a midwife. And amazingly, even though it was with a different hospital, it was the same midwife who'd come and sort of saved me on day five the last time. So I was like, she was behind a mask and I was like, Michaela, is that you? I was like, oh my God. It was a bit of an emotional,
I can imagine. How lovely.
It was lovely. Yeah. And so I was like, oh, can you help me with the breastfeeding as well? And she was like, oh, you're just, you know, you're trying to do it like as an older baby, you know, just trying to like think he knows what he's doing, but you need to like teach him, you need to, you know, he doesn't know what to do. So go slower and do this. And she showed me his positions. And so I was so, so glad I saw her. Because she's been the sort of breastfeeding guardian angel both times. But he was tongue-tied as well, and we didn't have it snipped this time because I really felt like it made no difference with Theo, and it kind of almost made it worse because he then had to relearn how to latch. So I decided to not have it snipped this time. And it was a bit harder because obviously we couldn't see any lactation consultants, we couldn't go to any breastfeeding cafes or anything like that. So that's when I was kind of relying a lot more on the internet. I tried to have a kind of Zoom call with a lactation consultant, but like it's not the same thing. So yeah, it was not as helpful. And then yeah, so I sort of found the La Leche League Facebook group, and that's when somebody then pointed me towards mammary constriction syndrome. And when I looked it up, I was like, that is what I've had both times. Like, and as soon as I did the massage, so this time I just had, I definitely had some like teary moments because I thought, oh my God, I'm doing this again. Like I can't have 10 weeks of crying every time I feed again. You know, I was like, I felt like I was going back down the same journey because it was starting to get a lot more painful. And even though I knew what a good latch was, it just couldn't get him to open his mouth enough. And I was just getting these really painful vasospasms between feeds as well. But I also this time actually used these, the Silverette nipple covers, which, oh my God, yes, they are absolutely amazing. And yeah, much, much better than those kind of disposable breast pads, which again, yeah, just stick to your nipples when they're all cut up and everything. And they were incredible. They're like kind of armor for your nipples. But they were brilliant. They were really, really great.
I guess then as well, the health visitors were also canceled because everything was, oh wow.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, so my only experience was when I went in to for that hub, and then when he had his jabs, wasn't with a health visitor but with the nurses and stuff, which again, a lot of confusion and people telling me, oh no, you need to be taking him to be weighed, and I was like, there's nothing, it's all closed and kind of stuff like that. So not a lot of confusion between, and not a lot of communication between kind of the nurses and the health visitor and the midwife, etc., because, which I guess is understandable because it's all a whole new world this time around. But yeah, there's been a few times this time around where I'm glad I'm a second time mom and just have confidence in myself a lot more as a mother and kind of knowing when something is wrong or not. You know, I think the first time you sort of look to healthcare professionals a lot more to sort of tell you exactly what to do. And I think this time around I've been a bit more kind of confident of my own gut feeling, which has been the correct thing to do.
And I also wanted to ask about the day four this time around. Mm. How did you find the anxiety, or has it shifted, or was it the same?
So I was a bit worried about it. For sure, because I thought, oh my God, but at least I thought, okay, if it happens again, I knew that it was sort of a 24-hour storm and I just need to get through it. And luckily this time I didn't have anything like that. So definitely a bit of tiredness, but I recovered a lot more easily from the birth. So I was able to walk around. Luckily this time I didn't have anything like that, but I felt like at least I was prepared for it if it was to come, but luckily it didn't come.
Well, thank you so much for sharing. All of your stories like hit me to the core. So thank you so much for sharing and coming on the show today, Jessica. It was seriously an honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode. If you'd like to see more of Jessica's story, head over to BritishBirthStories.com. See you next week.